The announcement by Mayor Lourdes that 100 Syrian refugees would be moving to Rutland over the next year took us all by surprise, including the Board of Aldermen. For me, it was a pleasant surprise, and I immediately felt a bit of fear and pride. Fear of the unknown and pride in the mayor's courage. I have received hate calls from people that I respect on this issue and see this reaction as simple fear. I will stand with the mayor on this issue and make no apologies for my belief. I will not bow to my fears or your fears either. Rutland, be brave and support doing the right thing. I'll be interested to see how it goes come fall. Before I moved to Vermont, I lived in Utica, New York for 3 years, and that is a refugee-receiving city. And the city was greatly benefited by the influx of refugees from many, many places. In the most recent years, Muslims from Bosnia and two different tribes of Somalis who have been exiled and living in refugee camps on the border with Kenya. It was a win-win for the city. And I think it will be a win-win here, even though the numbers are small. Surprises can be pleasant, unpleasant, and devastating. They can have a short-term impact, or require a long period of adjustment. When I was 40 years old, I was treated by my mother and two of my brothers to a visit in Boston. I was there to see the Ministerial Fellowship Committee, which was not a treat, for reasons that I won't go into. And I was surprised when we got back to the hotel, we were standing around the lobby chatting, and someone put their hands over my eyes, and I couldn't imagine who it might be. And I turned around, and it was one of my very dear friends from Maine. I had flown up from Texas where I was doing my internship, and I was greatly, greatly relieved and delighted and happy to see Holly. We are friends to this day, and it was a very wonderful surprise. I had an unpleasant surprise, which you may have read about in my bio if you read it. My cat, Tiger, one of two cats, disappeared. She crept out or snuck out of the house when I was leaving to go to an exercise class. It was dark and I didn't see her. And I didn't realize she was gone until about 11:30, when normally she'd be begging for food. And I looked in the closets, and I looked under the bed, and I looked in every nook and cranny in my very small apartment. And I had to wait and watch and wait and look and call for her and wait and wonder in extreme despair that she might be suffering, you know, not knowing, was a horrible experience for me. She did come home after 13 nights, I guess. I call it Tiger's toot. She went on a toot. So it was a surprise that she stayed away that long, that she was gone at all. I'm glad it had a happy resolution. A more devastating surprise is a tsunami. There have been two in my recent memory, one that was in the Indian Ocean and devastated many shoreline communities with no warning, all across from Thailand all the way over to India. And then, of course, the one in Fukushima and that region of Japan, which was even more devastating. A surprise usually brings with it change or a transition. The poem Transition by the notable New Yorker magazine writer Dorothy Parker first came to me on a card from my friend Jude. Jude sent it from a hospital in Colorado after having sexual reassignment surgery, part of a long transition from living as a male to living full-time as a woman. Transitions can be painful, even when they are planned over many months and years. Something new sometimes only emerges from blood, sweat, and tears, with fear and doubt and dark thoughts. Rumi says we have to welcome all these as if they were visitors. This being human is a guest house, every moment a new arrival. Joy, depression, meanness, welcome them all. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows, meet them at the door laughing. Come in, come in. What can I get you? Something to drink? A snack? Dinner? Oh, you need to stay the night? Sure, no problem. How can we have that attitude when some of the surprises in our lives are not welcome at all? Rumi insists that it is because we are being prepared for something new, maybe a delight. How is it that Rumi can have such equanimity about whatever comes? How is he so sure that all the joys and sorrows in our lives have been sent as a guide from beyond? Rumi loved and lost his beloved spiritual teacher, Shams of Tabriz. He was not one unfamiliar with sorrow. Out of his love and loss and his search for his beloved grew his faith. This example of change that leads to growth is somewhat like the metamorphosis of moths and butterflies. Their life begins as a hatchling from an egg into a very hungry larva, a caterpillar that is constantly eating. How these insects grow is through molting, shedding their old skin by growing a new one on the inside. Lobsters do the same, but they don't change as completely as larvae that pupate, building cocoons or chrysalises. In one description I read of the metamorphosis from chrysalis into butterfly is that the pupae's digestive juices that have broken down their food, the cellulose of leaves, with this they digest their own bodies inside that protective house. Only then do the structures of legs, antennae, and wings begin to grow. When they emerge, they can be quite beautiful, in addition to be amazing creatures because of how they become what they are. In their freshly emerged state, these insects, only in potentiality, are extremely vulnerable. They hide under leaves or build cocoons, sometimes in great tents of silk, in the case of some moths. Is it not so with us? When we are going through our most difficult transitions, we often need time away from others. We withdraw, sometimes in depression, in order to heal the place that is raw in us from change, from an unbidden surprise. Contrast with Dorothy Parker, who was in a funk, and in her poem plans on staying there until she can make her way, swimming in the deep water of her heart through the terrible, slow loveliness of spring. She tells us that now she is suffering with the woe that stretches me. Seeing the end of endless pain too often to believe she will never have peace. She says, it doesn't help me to know that the shriveled bough will burgeon sweetly in the spring. I am stuck in winter, damn it. My heart is dissolved with sadness such that it is of no matter to me that June will bust out with birds and flowers. Some people keep others away under stressful transitions with anger. Anger is quite often the mask of underlying pain. Rumi says, let them all in, these visitors, even if they're obnoxious. Parker says, leave me alone. Stop trying to cheer me up with platitudes. Transition needs growth, whether we like it or not. Viktor Frankl, a Holocaust survivor, wrote that what is to give light must endure burning. Through his most horrific experience of starvation, the torture of losing everything he held dear, the brutality of daily life in a concentration camp, Frankl discovered the only freedom that can be taken from you is the freedom to choose your attitude. He would not have survived if he hadn't learned that when you have no power to change your situation, the only thing you can change is yourself. Those all around him who could not change the way they made sense of their horrendous daily lives perished in despair. In many instances, they simply gave up because they had no hope. They could not grow in their understanding of themselves and their circumstances. What is to give light must endure burning. I think of diamonds formed deep in the earth, carbon atoms under massive weight and pressure, heat. Intense. So intense that the compressed carbon atoms metamorphose into diamonds. I think of the intense pain and labor of childbirth. A pain that is endured, hopefully, resulting in the joy of a tiny new life that changes and challenges one's life forever. My third brother, the youngest, was a surprise to my parents. My mother's Catholic, my father was not, but the three of us came a year apart, and then 4 years later came Henry. Surprise! Unfortunately, some unexpected pregnancies are not half a surprise. This being human is a guest house. The woe that literally stretches a woman's body in order to grow a new and precious human being. A guest house. I think of the pain that Jude went through for so many years to be able to live in her true identity. The pain of hiding her identity from her mother and siblings and wife when she was Michael. The pain of electrolysis, the pain in recovery from surgery to be more fully female, the fear of whether or not she would be accepted by people she cared about, including the people who hired her as an electrical engineer. Jude did not change her profession. She kept with the profession that Michael had. I think of the transitions in the lives of your congregation, transitions at work, the transition of being out of work from being laid off, the transition from being a worker earning a living to becoming one who has no money coming in, the transitions in our bodies as we develop into adults and age into death. The transition from being a partner or spouse to becoming a caregiver. From being full of health to having poor health. Having a body under siege from forces one cannot control. The transition in the loss of a loved one, particularly when it's a terrible surprise. These transitions bring change and challenge and pain. How do we endure this being a guest house? Grit our teeth and try to bear it. Live life to the fullest in spite of the aches and pains. Keep breathing. Share your troubles with someone who can listen with compassion and without judgment. Think of 5 things for which you are grateful each day and write them down. That has helped me many times. Meditate to achieve a state of equanimity and acceptance. Understand what comes as a guide from outside of your small and limited self. Perceive your challenges as opportunities to learn and to grow. Remember Viktor Frankl, choose your attitude. Cry, laugh, rage. We will all have differing responses and attitudes to what comes into our lives, bidden or unbidden, surprised or expected. But instead of thinking of ourselves as individuals with our individual attitudes and responses, what about turning our attention to that which is beautiful in nature, of which we are a part? What about seeing ourselves as part of a complex and interdependent whole, with much in common with all life around us, human and non-human? Everything is moving, changing all the time. No movement, no change, no life. The financial shenanigans on Wall Street brought us a terrific and terrible transition. Some people saw it coming, others did not. Revenues everywhere were down, they still are. Some people have learned to depend on the kindness of others for a while, perhaps a long while. The announced GDP this past week was a very small increase in the growth of our domestic product, which by some huge percentage, like something like 75%, is based on buying, consuming, purchasing. I've been noticing that there are some changes to the way people are doing things, making hour for hour community barter arrangements, starting alternative economies, co-ops, and such. Worker co-ops. So pain can bring growth in a healthy direction. It would be nice to, if we could believe that we are waking up from excessive greed into a new day of generosity of spirit. There are small signs of that, but they're not large enough. Our rugged individualism and selfish competitiveness could be morphing into cooperation and interdependence in greater numbers. This is certainly a time for asking what really matters, what ultimately gives our life meaning. Do we follow our passions, develop our unique gifts, and become givers instead of consumers? Do we cultivate happiness by thinking of success in a new way? I will leave this talk about surprises and transitions with the wisdom of the late John O'Donohue, an Irish poet, philosopher, and former Jesuit priest who died suddenly at age 52. His answer to the problem of dealing with change is defined and be embraced by beauty. Beauty with a capital B, which he calls the true source of compassion, serenity, and hope. There is beauty all around us. It's in human faces lit up by smiles or dissolved in tears. Beauty is in art and music and dance and all the ways we have of being creative. O'Donohue wrote, "When we lose sight of beauty, our struggle becomes tired and functional. When we expect and engage the beautiful, a new fluency is set free within us and between us. The heart becomes rekindled, and our lives brighten with unexpected courage. It is courage that restores the heart, that restores the hope to the heart. The time is now ripe for beauty to surprise and liberate us." Remember the guest house image of Rumi, this being human, the notion of welcoming whatever visitors may come, even the crowd of sorrow. Listen to a contemporary spiritual guide, again John O'Donohue. "Beauty does not linger, it only visits. Yet beauty's visitation affects us and invites us into its rhythm. It calls us to feel, think, and act beautifully in the world, to create and live a life that awakens the beautiful." For O'Donohue, beauty is his metaphorical name for God. When I need a shift in my attitude, I can listen and be transformed by a beautiful piece of music, by singing in harmony with others, by going for a walk where I can appreciate the hidden geometry and harmony of nature. If I'm feeling stuck in negative emotions or thoughts, I can walk outside to observe the fluidity of nature, of new growth, mature growth, or the ending of a year's growth. All are beautiful. What beauty there is in the fall as the natural world is ending its growth cycle, in the brightness and burning hues of the leaves against a deep blue sky. Growth and transitions and surprises and challenges and changes are sometimes painful processes out of which come new learning, refocusing of priorities, gems created by tremendous pressures, light glowing in our souls through enduring burning. The sacredness of an embracing beauty, born of passing through the sacred fire, that which was for what yet may be. How shall we choose to make meaning of our trials and transitions? With hearts opened to compassion by pain? With the welcome mat out for what visitors may come as guides from outside our small selves, pointing us toward the universal wholeness of this being human and being a larger self. I welcome your response.